Hello, Every Nation Bryanston family. It's great to be with you today. And thank you for welcoming me into your homes. It's a weird time we're in, hey? A lot feels uncertain and shaky right now, but I have this confidence that there's nothing shaky about who we are as a people in our mission to know God and make Him known. And there's nothing shaky in this time about who God is. And I just feel so aware and confident that He's never been bound to buildings and structure, and just have faith and hope for Him to show up in all of our lives, but globally, just praying for Him to show up and meet people so beautifully in this time. For those of you who don't know me or don't remember, I'm Sarah Bryce. I'm married to Joel Bryce, and we have two girls, Victoria and Aubrielle. So we're continuing on in our series called Zion, Building a City Through Prayer. And we've been looking at different aspects of prayer over the last number of weeks, and today I'm continuing on in looking at unanswered prayer. It's a weighty one, right? Like, this is a weighty aspect to prayer. But I think we all have stories in our lives of unanswered prayer where it feels like God's been silent or isn't coming through. And even with our five-year-old, Victoria, we're beginning to have these questions and conversations arising from her. She's beginning to realize that, you know, we might pray for her to feel better or someone we care about, and that doesn't necessarily happen or happen right away, or, you know, coming into her room in the middle of the night because she's afraid or has had a bad dream, and we pray and we talk through it, and she's beginning to say things like, "But mommy, it didn't work. I'm still afraid." She struggles with migraines. She actually started getting them when she was very, very young. We didn't really understand that's what it was at the time, but she thankfully isn't getting them as often, but she still gets them. And when she does, they're very debilitating. She's in severe pain and they can last 3 to 4 days. And I've been with her in these moments when she's just in utter brokenness in her pain, and she's crying and saying, "Mommy, I can't do this. Why won't God take it away?" So even at 5 years, she's beginning to wrestle with these questions. And my most recent story and conversation with her about this is actually quite funny. This was just a few weeks ago during the lockdown. I feel like this lockdown has created a lot of space for imagination and play in our girls, and it's been really cute and fun. And often it involves them being some type of animal. Lately, she's been a bit obsessed with cheetahs, and she has a headband with cheetah ears and uses a ribbon for a tail, and she is a cheetah. Like, she is a cheetah, right? In her head, she is. So anyways, this one day in particular, I'm doing the dishes after breakfast, because dishes are all I do anymore. I'm with Siv. I'm like, when do the dishes stop? But I was doing the dishes, and she came in the room, and she was clearly distraught. I thought something really bad must have happened. She's like, "Mommy." And I was like, "What's wrong, love?" And she said, "I prayed and asked God to make me a cheetah, and He didn't." And it took everything in me in that moment to not just burst out laughing, because it was quite funny, but instead use it as this, you know, opportunity to talk about prayer, and that every prayer we utter isn't necessarily answered, and how I'm actually really glad God didn't make her a cheetah. That is wonderful and beautiful and regal as a cheetah is. They're not humans, and they don't get to do the awesome things and bear the image of God in the earth like we get to. So I'm super glad that you're a person and that you're my child. But the point remains, we all have our stories of unanswered prayer, and the Bible is riddled with them as well. Early in the Bible, there's in the book of Job, we hear the story of Job, who's this righteous man. It says that he's blameless and upright, careful to do no evil, but he ultimately loses everything. He loses his family, his fortune, his health. And we hear Job in chapter 30, he says, "I shout for God and get nothing, no answer." Or in the Psalms, we see plenty of examples through the Psalms, and we spent a lot of time in Psalm 22 a few weeks ago with Marcia, but in Psalm 22 verses 1 and 2, David says, "God, my God, why would you abandon me now? Why do you remain distant, refusing to answer my tearful cries for your help in the night?" But ultimately, we see unanswered prayer in Jesus himself. In Gethsemane, we see him pleading for the cup of suffering and death to be taken from him. But yet we hear, as the Son of God himself, the very next day, hanging on the cross, in utter brokenness, says, "God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" So I'd venture to say that for anyone who's even ever muttered a prayer to God, for anyone who's ever prayed, I feel like one of the most common experiences, the most universal things experienced in prayer, is actually that of unanswered prayers. And so while I don't want to spend, and I'm not going to spend the next 30 minutes talking about all the potential reasons why we experience unanswered prayer, I want to highlight a few of them to us. There's lots of resources on unanswered prayer, really beautiful books. One that I just reread as I was prepping for this sermon is a book called God on Mute by Pete Gregg. Pete was the co-founder of an international prayer movement, but this book ultimately was birthed during the time that his wife was diagnosed with a brain tumor that all but killed her. And she survived. She's alive, but she still to this day suffers with severe epilepsy as a result of this tumor. So this book was ultimately birthed in that season, and Pete and his wife's wrestle through unanswered prayer. So like I said, I'm not going to spend the next 30 minutes talking about all the reasons why, but just to get our brains moving and thinking, and if this is something that you're more interested in, pick up a book, find a resource that can help guide you through these reasons why. But Pete ultimately talks about three main categories, and then he presents a total of 15 reasons as to why we might experience unanswered prayer in our lives. So the first category that he mentions is God's world, right? The world that we live in, the world that God made. And ultimately, this world is infinitely complex. It's delicate. And for it to remain stable, miracles, by definition, must remain rare. If every wedding day were sunny or every tropical storm averted, it would actually be detrimental to the world that we live in and to the lives of those who live in it. C.S. Lewis says that God can and does on occasion modify the behavior of matter and produce what we call miracles is part of Christian faith. But the very conception of a common and therefore stable world demands that these occasions should be extremely rare. And then Pete mentions the second category being what he would call God's will, right? So he talks about things within God's world and then God's will. So some of our prayers aren't answered because God actually has something better for us, or others because maybe there's sin in our lives we need to deal with, or maybe we're actually praying from selfish motives. Maybe he's allowing us to struggle a bit so that he can actually draw us deeper into relationship with himself. Maybe a yes to our prayer would actually be a violation of someone else's free will. Or perhaps God is answering our prayer just subtly and slowly. And then the third category that Pete mentions, he calls God's war. I don't know that I love the wording. I think he's trying to help us, like, God's world, God's will, God's war. Get it? But the point here, like, is, and not, again, not to overhype this, but just the point that some of our prayers aren't answered because there is an enemy, right? Roaring around like a lion, seeking to attack the image of God in us. This cosmic rebellion between good and evil in the world. So again, just throwing some thoughts out there, getting us thinking, but ultimately, and where I want to focus today, is that just as we cannot remove suffering and unanswered prayer from the life of Jesus, neither can we remove them from ours. And I feel like we've lost the plot a bit if we've somehow convinced ourselves that a life surrendered to Jesus will be a life without pain or suffering or without the experience of unanswered prayer. In John 16:13, Jesus says to his disciples, "In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world." So ultimately the question then becomes, how do we respond to the pain of unanswered prayer? Because we will experience it. And at the risk of sounding too formulaic, I feel like there's four steps I want to take us through of how we respond when we're in the midst of unanswered prayer. And I think the first step is that we lament. We're honest with God. He can handle our anger, our pain, and our frustration. And we grieve. Like Jesus in Gethsemane, we weep. And Marcia talked about lament a few weeks ago, and we talked about how we actually see lament all throughout the Bible, especially in books such as Job and Psalms and Lamentations. But ultimately, in seeing Jesus in Gethsemane and in hearing his final words as he hung on the cross, "Father, why have you forsaken me?" we are assured that it's okay to grieve and to cry, to plead with God and wonder why. And yes, lament is a venting of emotion of sorts, but it's so much more than that. It actually gives voice to the injustice, to the evil, to the pain and the brokenness of this world. It acknowledges that things are not yet as they should be. Jesus taught us to pray in the Lord's Prayer, "Your kingdom come, your will be done." And it actually acknowledges that there are things God longs for, right? That prayer acknowledges that God actually longs for things that have not yet happened. And our lament, it does the same. It acknowledges that. So it's necessary, it's sacred, it's holy. In Psalm 56:8, it says that, "You've kept track of all of my wandering and my weeping. You've stored my many tears in your bottle. Not one will be lost." You guys, these tears, this pain, our lament, it does not go unnoticed, and it's not wasted on God. But we can't stop here, though, right? Marcia talked about this. It's drawing near and being with God in our brokenness. And if we do, if we stop in this place without drawing near to God, the danger becomes bitterness and resentment towards God, of pushing him away and placing him on trial. And guys, how many people do we know, and maybe it's been us at times, but how many people do we know who have stopped here, right? They stop here and then ultimately become disillusioned and walk away from God. The questions, the pain, the hurt is too much, and they push him away. But the sad part about this is that his removal from the equation of our suffering doesn't actually solve anything. Pete in his book says, "But rather, the pain just simply gets reduced to meaningless losses in the great evolutionary casino." So to not allow God into this place of suffering with us, to push him away, our suffering's not gone. It changes nothing about our suffering. We just suffer alone. And our suffering, this lament, then becomes meaningless rather than holy. Our second daughter, Aubrielle, she's 2.5. She is our fiery one. She has big emotions, and whatever it is that she's feeling, it's large. So when she is hurt, when she's frustrated, when things have not gone her way, when she doesn't get what she wants from us or in the timing that she thinks she should have it, she's very angry, and she's very loud. It's a lot of screaming. It's flailing, it's hitting, it's screaming, it's very intense. And Joel and I have learned with her that if we try to rush into that moment immediately to comfort her or be with her, it actually makes it worse. She actually gets more frustrated, and then we're getting hit by her. Right, we've learned that she needs time. She needs time to get it out. And then always, inevitably, there comes this moment where this softening comes over her. She looks up and sees us, and we now know that's our moment, right? That's when we can swoop in as her parents and grieve with her and comfort her and help her process her emotions. But she still has to get it out. So step two, like step one is we lament, we grieve. Two, in that place of brokenness and lament, we allow him to come close. We allow ourselves to be held by his love. It's like Jesus in Gethsemane, where he looks up from his pain and calls out, "Abba, Father." And guys, Abba was the most intimate word for father in Aramaic. So in this moment, we're seeing the beautiful intimacy and humanity of Jesus, where in his desperation, in his brokenness, this deep desire to be held as a child in the arms of his father in the midst of his suffering. In Zephaniah 3, verse 17, Zephaniah speaks prophetically to the people of Judah, and he describes God as present with his children, strong to save, calming us with his love, delighting over us with song. He promises to draw near to our broken hearts, and he longs to be with us in our pain. Again, in God on Mute, Pete says, when life hurts and we find ourselves struggling to make sense of unanswered prayer, we often wonder why God doesn't just click his fingers and make everything better. At such times of unknowing, when there's nothing good in the pain and we're helpless and hopeless, there's comfort in trusting God to carry us through the turmoil in his arms. We may not be able to understand why he's allowing the situation to continue when he clearly has the power to stop it, but like a baby crying without comprehension in its father's arms, we can still trust Abba, Father. Guys, we never leave Abriel in those moments. We never walk away. We're there. In her rage, we're there, right? We're there, and we're just waiting for the moment that we'll see that softening come over her and where she'll allow us to swoop in and pick her up and be with her in all that she's feeling in that moment. A dear friend of ours, when he was 14, he lost his father to cancer. And he tells this really beautiful story that I think highlights this transition, this moment of moving from just getting out our raw emotion to then collapsing into the loving arms of our father. And Nate tells the story of after his father dies, he's just sprinting down the street outside. He's so angry. He's so mad. And he finally just collapses to the ground in his anger and frustration and grief. And he's screaming, like he's screaming at the heavens. And in this moment, he has this picture and he sees himself banging his fists in the air. And then he realizes it's not actually the air that he's banging. He sees God with his arms stretched out, this man, arms wide open. And Nate sees himself as actually banging against the chest of God. And then he finally looks up in this picture and he sees that God is actually weeping with him. He's just standing there taking Nate's beating on his chest. And in that moment in this picture, Nate sees himself just collapse into the arms of the Father. And then those arms that were outstretched just come in close and pull him in and they weep together. Guys, and that's this picture of moving from our brokenness, our grief, and our unanswered prayers to being held by the love of a Father. And then from this place, step three, from this place of being held in his arms and knowing his love, even in the middle of our grief, then we're able to move to this beautiful place of surrender to the bigness and to the mystery that is God. We're able to worship him, to see and acknowledge his worthiness, even in the midst of our pain. His love, being held in his love, allows us to come to the place where ultimately, like Jesus, we can say, but not my will, but yours be done. Where even in our pain, even when the unanswers remain, we're held by his love, we can see him in his greatness, and where as much as we still long for the answers to our prayer, we're actually okay if it's not answered because we know that he's enough. Right, so we talked about Psalm 22 earlier on, and we see this in Psalm 22, where in verses 1 and 2, where David's saying, why do you remain distant, refusing to answer my tearful and desperate cries? To then in verse 3 saying, yet I know that you are most holy. It's indisputable. You are God enthroned. Or like Job, right? He's lost everything, and he finally comes to this point where he's just lamenting and lashing out at God. And God replies with this long, eloquent, where were you, Job, when I laid the earth's foundations? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know. Who laid its cornerstone while the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy? To which Job replies, in chapter 42, verse 5. I had heard of you only by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. He had heard of God, right? But now he was actually able to see him for who he really is. Guys, this is worship. And what strikes me here is that it's not that Job's prayers were yet answered. It's that the answers became less important in the light of God's love and his greatness. So we lament and we allow God to hold us. And then from that place, this step three, right, is it's coming to the place where we're able to acknowledge that we see in part what he sees in whole. And we can then worship him. We can fix our attention and our affection on him, even in the midst of our pain, even if our answer never comes. I have no biblical support for what I'm about to share, but I have this picture, you guys. I picture finally being with God, finally being face to face with him, and we sit down and he pulls out, I always picture it as this like old school like projector. You remember those with like the film reel? And I picture sitting down with God, and it's almost as if we have the reel, the film reel of how we saw our lives, and then God pulls out the reel, the film reel of his scene in whole. And it's almost as if these two reels of film get like placed together, and we sit and watch it with the Father. Like, and for the first time ever, we see our lives from the perspective of God. So those moments where it felt like, where were you? How could you have left me? We see where he was and what was happening, or moments of kindness or serving, and we see the ripple effect that that had in the earth and other lives it affected. And I picture it as this beautiful moment of worship with God, of looking at our lives from his angle. And so it's surrendering to that, that we see in part what he sees in whole. Paul in 2 Corinthians 12, when he talks about the thorn in his side and pleading with the Lord three times for it to be taken away. And God says to him, "My grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in your weakness." And Paul ultimately replies, "I will boast then in my weakness, for when I am weak, then I am strong." So in our pain, in this lament, in our weakness, being held by his love, we can surrender to his bigness. We can surrender to the mystery that is God. And then that becomes our strength. So step four in this process of dealing with our unanswered prayer, I think that this step four is rising in the strength to step back into the story as his co-heirs, his co-sufferers, his co-creators, right? His love and his bigness give us the courage that we need to rise and step back into the story. And I think this will look different given the nature of the circumstances surrounding our unanswered prayer. I'm gonna present a number of ways that I think this sometimes looks to step back into the story. And sometimes I think it's a mixture of many of these things. But sometimes I think this means accepting the clear answer that God's given us, even if we don't like it, even if it's not the answer we were seeking. It's like Jesus asking for the cup to be taken from him, but ultimately surrendering to the will of the Father and going to the cross. Sometimes I think this rising in strength will look like becoming the answers to our own prayers. Guys, I think there's times that we're asking God to do something that he's already empowered and equipped us to do. Like praying beautiful prayers, right? Coming from this genuine place in our hearts. Like, "Jesus, please provide food for those who are hungry." But maybe God's waiting for us to go feed them. Or, "Jesus, please heal this broken relationship in my family." But maybe he's waiting for us to take the first step in asking for forgiveness. Or maybe it's, "God, please, I need a job. I'm desperate for work." But he's saying, "There's one there. You've been looking at it, but you're not seeing yourself the way I see you, and therefore you've been too afraid to apply." Or maybe it's that you've been pleading with God regarding the injustices that you see in the world around you, but He's saying, how have I uniquely equipped you to help address those things? As the hands and feet of Jesus in the earth, guys, I think there are times where we're asking Him to do things that He's already equipped and empowered us to do. I think other times this rising in strength will look like continuing to press in prayer, to not lose hope, to continue to ask and believe that He's still at work, even in the darkness, even when it feels silent. I want to read from Luke chapter 18, Jesus speaking to His disciples about being persistent in prayer. So starting in verse 1, Jesus told them a story showing that it was necessary for them to pray consistently and never quit. He said, "There was once a judge in a city who never gave a thought and cared nothing, There was once a judge in some city who never gave God a thought and cared nothing for people. A widow in that city kept after him. She said, 'My rights are being violated. Protect me.' He never gave her the time of day. But after this went on, this judge said to himself, 'I care nothing what God thinks, even less what people think. But because this widow won't quit badgering me, I'd better do something and see that she gets justice. Otherwise, I'm going to end up beaten black and blue by her pounding.' Then Jesus said to them, 'Do you hear what that judge, corrupt as he is saying? So what makes you think God won't step in and work justice for his chosen people who continue to cry out for help? Won't he stick up for them? I assure you he will. He will not drag his feet. But how much of that kind of persistent faith will the Son of Man find on the earth when he returns?" So I think there's times when we need to persist in prayer. We need to continue to ask God and believe that he can do it. From the time that Isaiah prophesied God coming in the form of a man to be king, from the time that was prophesied in Isaiah to the time that Jesus actually showed up was approximately 500 years. And he certainly didn't act or look the way that they thought or hoped he would. And then can you imagine the pain of his followers, the disillusionment they felt as he lay dead in a tomb? All hope seemed lost, I'm sure, until finally 3 days later he rose. Or remember Jairus, remember when we talked about this story in Mark? He had come to Jesus asking for the healing of his daughter, but Jairus would have felt like he took too long, right? Jesus took too long and his daughter died. But Jesus showed up late in Jairus's mind, but in so doing, he actually answered Jairus's prayer in a way that no one had faith for or ever could have expected. Tim Keller says, "God's sense of timing will confound ours. His grace rarely operates according to our schedule. And if we try to impose our schedule and timing on him, we will struggle to feel loved by him." So sometimes I think this rising in strength looks like continuing to press in to the areas where our prayers remain unanswered, where God still seems silent. And the answers may not come in the way or the timing we had imagined or hoped, but it doesn't mean they aren't coming or that they aren't coming in the timing in the way that we actually need them. And I feel like in talking about this, I'd be remiss to not acknowledge that this can be so hard. It can be so hard to press in and to continue to ask and believe for something when everything around us is telling a different story. This was mine and Joel's experience with having children. It was a painful 5 years. And I'm not going to say that we did the season perfectly at all. We definitely vacillated so many times between lament and actually more bordering at times on resentment and disillusionment, but then circling back to hope and then pressing in again and continuing to believe and pray and ask for children. And guys, during this time, I was actually working as an obstetric nurse. This was my job, was every day to come alongside women as they gave birth to their own children. It was so painful. And I remember being at baby showers of friends and having to excuse myself because literally the pain was so intense I couldn't stay in the room. It can be so, so hard. In Romans 5, verses 3 through 4, it says, "Even in times of trouble, we have a joyful confidence, knowing that our pressures will develop in us patient endurance, and patient endurance will refine our character, and proven character leads us back to hope." And in 2 Corinthians 4, verse 17, it says, "We view our slight, short-lived troubles in the light of eternity. We see our difficulties as the substance that produces for us an eternal, weighty glory far beyond all comparison." You guys, as hard and as painful as this can be, to press in, to fight for something in prayer when everything else is telling a different story, you guys, as painful as it is, there's beauty here. There's a hard-fought nearness to God that's forged in these times. Character is formed. And I'm paraphrasing my husband here, but character is a currency that can't be taken from us. When the deposit's made, it's solid and it's deep. And you guys, if and when the breakthrough comes, there is such deep joy, such beautiful joy shared with our Father. And I'm emotional because what I want to say now is, guys, I have etched in my mind forever the moment that Joel and I sat on our couch together and listened to the voicemail from the nurse telling us that we were, in fact, pregnant with Victoria. You guys, there's just such beauty in journeying and asking and petitioning God for something and then worshiping Him in the process and then also in the breakthrough. But finally, you guys, there are times when the answers remain inevitably elusive or are ultimately a no. Where it seems that no matter the amount of work we do, no matter how hard or persistently we pray, no matter how long we wait, where it seems the answers are nowhere to be found. The marriage failed. Hatred and poverty persist. The cancer spread. Ben's wife died. And in these horribly painful times, I believe that to rise in strength, to step back into the story, becomes this insane challenge to live from the awareness that the death and decay, the injustice and the brokenness of this world do not win in the end. They are ultimately not the end of the story. Pete, in his book, God on Mute, says that one ultimate miracle, the resurrection of the Son of God from the dead, assures us that every buried dream and dashed hope will ultimately be absorbed and resurrected into a reality far greater than anything we could currently imagine. You guys, Jesus rose with the marks of His unanswered prayers etched all over His body. The scars on His risen body bore witness to His prayers that had gone unanswered. The cup was not taken from Him. He did suffer. He did die. But this was by no means the end of the story. And similarly, our unanswered prayers, they will forever change us. They will forever mark us. But neither are they the end of the story. They are our reminders, our promise of what's to come, of the story that is unfolding and will be told for all of time and eternity. Ben and everyone who knew and loved Kirsten, everyone who begged for her life in the moments that she was dying, they will forever be marked by the unanswered prayers that ended with her death. And the insane challenge will be to look the death that stole her life in the face and say, "You might mark us, But you won't define us or Kirsten's story. You do not win in the end. Revelations 21:4 says, He will wipe away every tear from their eyes and eliminate death entirely. No one will mourn or weep any longer. The pain of wounds will no longer exist, for the old order has ceased. And in Romans chapter 8, it says, But now, with eager expectation, all creation longs for freedom from its slavery to decay and to experience with us the wonderful freedom coming to God's children. To this day, we are aware of the universal agony and groaning of creation as if it were in the contractions of labor for childbirth. Yet even in the midst of all these things, we triumph over them all. For God has made us to be more than conquerors, and His demonstrated love is our glorious victory over everything. 1 Corinthians 15:19 says, If the only benefit of our hope in Christ is limited to this life on earth, we deserve to be pitied more than all others. Guys, can you just close your eyes with me for a minute? Like, I want you to see this and picture this in your mind. King Jesus, still marked with the scars of his unanswered prayers, pouring out the bottled tears of our lament, of our unanswered prayers, He pours them out to water the earth as it lets out its final groan. And as it does, guys, there's color and beauty and hope and life and justice that ripple forth. While we, along with all of earth and heaven, shout, this was always how it was meant to be. So guys, let's live to bring that kingdom. Let's live to bring that unseen reality. Here and now, let's press into the brokenness and the injustices around us, into the ache of our unanswered prayers, to fix our attention and our affection on God as we pull heaven down into those places, to live like we actually believe the story we profess. So Jesus, just like you, we won't run from the pain of our unanswered prayers. Help us to acknowledge our grief, our ache, to lament, but to run to you, Father, in our brokenness, to surrender to your bigness, to the mystery that is God, to worship you in our pain, and to rise in hope and strength to press in to see your kingdom come, God, here on earth, just as it is in heaven. And I pray for those who don't know you, Father, or for those who have walked away from you in their pain. Would you draw near? Would you reveal your love to them? Would you overwhelm them with your greatness, even in the midst of the pain, even in the midst of prayers that remain unanswered? Jesus, we worship you and we bless you. We say that you are worthy. You are worthy of our affection. You are worthy of our attention. In the midst of our unanswered prayers, God, we worship you. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May he turn his face towards you and give you peace.